as you're hearing the story in the news about sea levels rising, a huge bunch of people involved in Antarctic research are gathering in Hobart this morning, some of the finest logistical minds in the world and scientific minds in the world, to work out how they're going to keep doing the work that they're doing, because changes in sea ice mean certainly the Australians had to helicopter everything in this year, and you can't do that for too many years. And the English, who are on the other side of the continent, have another whole set of problems. And representing each side of these coins this morning is Dr. Rob Wooding from the Australian Antarctic Division. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Andrew Fleming from the British Antarctic Survey, who is the remote sensing manager. Hi, Andrew.
Good morning.
So, Rob, let's start with you. What's the problem on the Australian side?
Well, yes, Rick, we've experienced some growing sea ice, especially around Mawson Station. Mawson Station, which is the one that's furthest west, it's sort of, if you think of the map in the sort of Mercator projection, it's below Mauritius on the Antarctic continent. That area has experienced growing sea ice in recent years. Not this last summer, but the summer before, we had to use helicopters to get in over about 50 nautical miles of ice. That's very difficult for getting fuel in. We need to get about 1 million litres of fuel in there every year, and it's not sustainable in that situation. So it's caused us some problems, and we are concerned about the growing sea ice and making plans to deal with it.
Andrew, over on the east, how is it different?
On the west, so where you operate around the Antarctic Peninsula, which is the pointy bit that sticks out from the continent, if you want a rough picture of it.
My language now.
So over there, we haven't experienced the same level of increase in sea ice extent. It's regionally different around the continent. In actual fact, in recent years, it's reduced somewhat. But the overall picture is that the sea ice is variable, and we need to better understand that to make sure that we can all operate safely and as efficiently as possible, and we don't get delayed, and we make best use of the resources we've got. So that's the focus of the workshop. We need to understand how we best forecast sea ice.
Rob, this workshop's not been planned for years. It's been put together quite quickly, actually. Is that because the variability is increasing? Is it less predictable?
Yes, that's right. At our meeting, there's a sort of council of managers of Antarctic programs, and at our meeting last year in Christchurch, and it was only about 7 months ago, we all realised that many of us were having problems with sea ice, and that the thing to do was to get together and bring together scientists from around the world and expert sort of forecasters and monitors such as Andrew here, and also logisticians, people who actually manage the operations, to talk about how we can deal with this problem. And it is variable. So there are some parts of Antarctica that aren't experiencing problems, and then there are some who are experiencing serious problems. And we've had one lecture last night from Professor Tony Warby, the head of the Antarctic Climate and Ecosystems Cooperative Research Centre. Sorry about the long names there. He told us that, indeed, the ice is getting worse in some parts of the continent, and it's actually melting and disappearing in other parts of the continent.
Andrew, you work reporting on this in real time for people who are working in Antarctica using satellite imagery. What kind of information helps you be able to do that more accurately?
So it's all about the level of information we get and the type of data we can get. And the Antarctic and the Southern Ocean around it is vast. There's only one real way of monitoring that in any real sense, and that's using satellites. And so we need to have satellites that are providing us images really quickly, a high repeat, a high detail. And the type of satellites we use are special in that they see straight through clouds, so they're radar satellites. So we've got no issue with cloud, works day and night, and gives us a really good detailed picture of the sea surface and where the sea ice is.
So that's obviously pretty straightforward in some ways, so long as the technology is good enough. What about making predictions for seasons?
Well, that's where it gets really difficult, because we can observe it and we can measure where the sea ice is and get a really good detailed picture. And there's problems with that in itself, especially given that the users are on the end of really poor connections. So trying to get data to them is really difficult. But in terms of predicting where the sea ice is going to go to next, well, that's subject to a whole range of factors, where the wind's blowing, the ocean currents, etc., the temperature. So we have to try and develop models and ways of predicting that allow us to have some picture of forecasting. So it's like a weather prediction, but for sea ice.
And when you hear a story like the one running today about sea level rise happening faster than everybody thought, that's another whole factor to add in. So how do you try and manage all these factors, Rob, in terms of forward planning?
Well, it is something we're aware of, that we have to deal with a changing climate down there. We've found differences in temperature in some of our stations, also where the snow's melted more, where we have problems with sometimes with not having snow to travel over on the vehicles that we use. So that's the other end of the spectrum. So in some areas we're getting more ice and more problems there. In other areas we're having more melt and we're experiencing difficulties there as well.
And the runway has been a problem as well?
The runway has been a problem, though. In the last few seasons we've managed to find a way of operating it where we can use it at the times it doesn't melt. So it hasn't been such a problem in the last few years.
What are the questions for the British Antarctic Survey then, if you're having the opposite problem?
Well, it may be the opposite problem in terms of the regional pattern of sea ice, but we still have that variability. So one year we can have an area and an approach to one of our bases that's clear and open and we can operate a normal full-length season. Then in another year the sea ice extent will have changed dramatically and we're in a situation where it's taking us days longer to get into a base or not even able to resupply it at all. So it's being able to account for that variability. And of course at the start of the season or even a few weeks in advance, you've no idea about what the sea ice conditions are going to be like. So having that sort of forecast, that outlook, is the vital next step.
What's the ideal outcome? Because you're meeting for, what, 3 days, is it? 3.5
yes,
days.
Okay.
Are you hoping to come out with a plan of action from this, Rob?
No. Well, I think what we're hoping for is for the scientists to give us a clear picture of what they think's happening, and I'm sure we'll get that, and the sort of the tendencies into future directions. And then we're also going to talk about how the second day of the workshop, we're going to talk about how Andrew and other people can give us better forecasting in short time frames so we can understand each season how we need to manage the situation.
Andrew?
Yep.
How are you doing that? What's the plan?
Well, the plan for that is going to be involved and complex and involve not just us. I mean, it's going to be a collaborative effort. I mean, we've got a long history in the Antarctic of working together on problems like this. Rob mentioned COMNAP as being one forum for that. And then there's the Scientific Committee on Antarctic Research as well that brings together a lot of people working on this sort of problem. So we've got a group of people that are willing. If we can define the problem, then we can direct our science programs and direct our research to make sure that we're investing it in the right way. And I think this opportunity will give us the right focus that we go away and make sure that we understand what the next steps are, who's working on what, and how we can best collaborate to deliver that.
I thought your answer was just going to be, give me a bigger satellite.
Well, we need more satellites, of course, but it's if only it was that simple.
What side outcomes might come from having these people gathered? Because it's real, you know, to look at logistics so specifically and how logistics interact with the environment, it's maybe something that's not been looked at in this way before.
It's not very common to have a meeting like this where we bring together scientists and logisticians to talk and cross-fertilise each other with ideas. It's something that we want to do a lot more of in the next few years. It's really... People like me are basically there to support the scientists doing their research in Antarctica, and I think the scientists are really excited to have the opportunity to come and give something back so that to help us in supporting them. So it's a very good arrangement. I might also say it's a great thing for Hobart to have all these people here. It's another indication of what a centre for Antarctic science and logistics at Hobart is. It's a major world centre for this sort of activity.
And gee, we've really turned on the weather for it. It's fantastic for
just
all our
like
international...
The UK.
International visitors, nice to speak with you this morning. Dr. Rob Wooding from the Australian Antarctic Division and Andrew Fleming from the British Antarctic Survey. I'll let you get back to your meetings.
Thank you, Rick.